answers in Genesis.
Ark Encounter,
the Creation Museum.
Both are more than just family destinations. They're resources to help you and your family deepen your understanding of the Bible. Wesley Wildman and Tony Battagliano are taking that to another level with AFA at the Ark. October 31st through November 2nd, you'll get to learn from special presentations and a live panel discussion with Wesley and Tony. For all the details, visit afa.net/events today and click AFA at the Ark.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Tuesday, June the 4th, 2024. And as always, we thank you for listening to AFR. Well, joining me in studio is Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning.
Morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
And in Kansas City, KS, is our good friend Ray Pritchard. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well. What's the weather report there in KC?
We're in this cycle, Tim, where every two or three days we're getting wild weather, and we're awaiting some more.
Seriously?
Wild. Yeah. Well, you know, it's been bad in Dallas. It's been really rough in Oklahoma City. But we're kind of at the top of that tornado alley stuff.
Right.
And so, yeah, right now it's okay, but this afternoon, if I'm going to ride my bike, I got to do it right after the radio today.
I got you. How you doing with your treatments there?
Well, radiation is done, and I've got about another, I'm counting it down, about another 48 days, and it will all be done, all completely done. And let me tell you, I'm going to be a happy camper when that last day is done.
Amen.
Is there any way that, is there any travel plans or ways to celebrate after the fact?
You know, in the summer, typically I do the Bible conference.
Sure.
We'll be in Oregon. We'll be in North Carolina, New York, and I guess somewhere in Montana, I guess. So, and Montana, up seeing our son Mark and his family. He pastors in Missoula. So, okay, this is way too much information, right? But August 22nd is our 50th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And so we are planning, and I will be done. I'll be done with the treatment about 3 weeks before that. So we're planning to get away. We're still in deep negotiations
about what to do and where to go.
That's exactly right.
But you'll be able to celebrate both your wedding anniversary and being through with all.
I got a challenge for you.
Yes, sir.
You want to celebrate your end of treatment for your cancer.
Prostate cancer.
Yeah. So you're into treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You need to just hop on your bike and ride to Oregon.
Now, that's a challenge.
You know what I'm saying? As a way of celebrating. Just to challenge yourself.
Be a man. Get on your bike.
Be a man. Restore that testosterone.
That's right.
Riding all the way to Oregon.
Right over the Rocky Mountains.
We laugh and joke about that because nobody in this studio or outside the studio on the radio is going to do that, meaning Ray. However, there are people that bike like that.
Yes, there are.
And they're serious about it, and they get their packs on.
They're
from outer space.
People have done that. Every now and then you'll hear about somebody for a good cause.
Oh, I know.
Biking from East Coast to West Coast.
Yeah, we've interviewed a few people that, not a few, but I think two that have biked
that.
Coast to coast before.
Listen, I'm going to bike from here to Five Guys. Get a great big hamburger.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's my plan.
That's my type of biking right there. Yes.
All right. Well, we just praise the Lord that you're on the way back to full health there.
Hey, thank you, Tim.
Right. Absolutely, brother. All right, Fred.
Lots happening in Washington these days. There was a hearing yesterday involving the face of COVID regulations, Dr. Anthony Fauci. And because he's officially retired, but he is back before these hearings because of emails that have become public recently with an exchange with one of his former officials talking about hiding emails from freedom of information requests, that sort of thing. But yesterday, there was an interesting moment in the hearing when one of the Republicans, Congressman McCormick it was, played a piece of audio from a October 2020 audiobook recording that Fauci gave. Now, I want you to listen carefully to this because, well, that's all I'm going to say because it has to do with what was the thinking, what was the reasoning, who was behind the forced shot mandates, masks, 6 feet, the whole thing. Have a listen to this. This is Fauci from 2020, cut number one.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you are going to have universities and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us? You get vaccinated. When you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological and they get vaccinated.
When was that from?
This is October 2020, an audiobook recording of his biography.
We have forgotten so much. Now, I'm glad some people in Washington have not on our side, meaning the, you know, conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people and a lot of politicians and a lot of ordinary people have forgotten what all Fauci did during his, was it about a year, year and a half or so?
When he almost was, a reign of terror.
It was.
Yes.
We forget that. We could go on for hours on this, but just one more that I called before it happened was, of course, he was all about masks, right? At first. He later then said that there's no point in ever wearing a mask.
No, it was reversed. First, he said there's no point. He said when COVID hit our shores, he said you can wear a mask if you want to, I'm paraphrasing, if it makes you feel better, but it doesn't stop the spread of COVID. Yeah. Then he reversed himself.
To all masks all day.
Mask up now.
And then he came back a third time and said, there's no reason to wear a mask.
I don't know about that.
So that's so it happened in that order, all three of those. But most importantly, in that process, in the middle one, when he said you need to wear a mask, he also said two masks are better than one, and you should double up and wear both masks. He said that only makes
really?
Oh, yeah. There's audio. He said that. He said that. It makes as common sense to wear two masks.
What I don't like about what I heard right there, mm-hmm. and I think it hit everybody the same way. So you're saying that what the recording there we just heard of Dr. Fauci was when?
October 2020 in an audiobook recording of his biography.
Is he writing? So he must have been writing a biography prior to COVID.
Yes.
So then he write. This is a recording in real time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play that again because that was so condescending.
Mm-hmm.
And listen how he says, buddy, like, oh, yeah, you're going to get the shot. You're going to get the shot or we're going to make your life hell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I hear from what he says. I mean, play that again.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you are going to have universities and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us? You get vaccinated. When you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological and they get vaccinated.
What he's saying, BS. Okay, right there. I think that's when we bleeped it out. Ray, what's your reaction to this?
Condescending is one thing. Arrogant is another. Ignorant is another. Totalitarian might be the best word I can say about that. This is a totalitarian impulse. This is what people do who think they have, well, who think that the pandemic would give them unlimited power. And to one extent, he's right. When you force people to make these hard choices, well, he thought he could just push people around. You know what? I was reminded, Tim, of that old saying, when people tell you who they are, believe them. Anthony Fauci has told us over and over again who he is. We ought to believe him. He's an authoritarian. He's a totalitarian. And he has finally been exposed.
Yeah. So who played that yesterday? Thank you. That good comment. I agree, Ray. Who played that?
It was Congressman McCormick, a Republican.
Played that?
Yes.
At the hearing.
He played it at the hearing. And it was almost like Fauci just sat there. He couldn't deny it.
No, it's his own voice.
That was the beauty of this.
Yeah.
He couldn't deny saying, well, you know, I
don't. What did he say? Did he say
anything? I don't remember saying that or taken out of context. No, it's not taken out of context.
Right.
It's right out of your own recording. And I agree totally with what Ray is saying. What's scary about that is this totalitarian attitude. We're going to make your life miserable unless you do exactly.
Did Trump have fired him?
Yeah. He should have fired him.
Well, as the information like this came out, absolutely. Absolutely.
Talking about at the time, if you could go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you remember, Trump said...
Or could he have even fired? Can you even fire a civil servant like that in that position?
He could not have given him the platform he did.
Yes.
But if you remember, Trump said himself, he said, I have many people telling me to fire or get rid of Fauci, including a lot of people in the conservative and Republican movement. A lot of business owners are telling me to fire him because it's going to kill the economy, and he did do it.
But he's saying a lot of people were advising him to do it, and he decided not to.
Yeah.
Well go ahead.
I tell you what, the other thing that really bothers me about this, people lost their careers.
Yes.
Thousands in our U.S. military lost their careers. Nurses lost their careers.
Yeah. Everybody knows somebody.
Yes. A large, tens of thousands of small business owners shut down and never recovered.
Yes.
And all the big box stores, Walmart, Target, Lowe's, all the big box stores, they stayed open and pushed through all the mandates and stayed open. And they thrived and survived through it. Amazon, others. While all the small mom-and-pop local shops shut down and never came back.
And let's not forget the other confession from Fauci, the six-foot rule, which led to the shutdown of most of the nation's public schools. There was no science behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Fauci tried to blame the CDC. He said that was the CDC's idea. But it was not based on any science. But look at all the classroom time our kids suffered. They lost that. Because of these bureaucrats just popping things out and saying, we're going to make you do this.
Yeah. Any more clips we need to play from the hearing yesterday?
Not from that hearing, no.
Okay. Anyway, is that continued today or is that over?
No, that's over. There's a couple of more today. And
hearings. Regarding COVID?
Not regarding COVid, no. But I'm going to...
You mean congressional hearings, other issues?
Yes, okay. Sir. I've got you another one.
Okay.
The reason... I looked it up. The reason Fauci changed his mind the third time, it was in context to if you've got vaccinated, you don't need a mask.
Oh, I got you.
That makes sense.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. But
No, actually, it does. You're right. No, it doesn't. None of it makes
sense. You're telling me that makes sense, but yes. What you've told me about doesn't make
right.
sense.
Right, yes.
In the sense that he... Just well,
and you do need this. Gets very confusing of the timeline of all this that happened and all that he said because he changed his mind many times on multiple things and he contradicted himself. He was also the one that said if you get the vaccine, you cannot spread COVID and you cannot get COVID. And Oh yeah, he said that out of his mouth. Those were his words.
Well, you got to be fired.
Well,
I say fired. You're completely and totally discredited.
Yes, 100%.
If he said, I don't look that up for
oh,
sure.
Oh no, those are his words. I saw the video clip before I came downstairs.
You're saying if you get the COVID vaccine,
he was in an interview with a young lady who was interviewing him, saying, "I wanted to get back to normal life. I want to get back. Okay. I got a pool party coming up. I'm inviting my friends." And he said, "Well, you need." And then she said, "What can I do to encourage them to get vaccinated?" He said, you let them know that if you get vaccinated, that you cannot get COVID and you cannot spread COVID if you get vaccinated. I forget the date of that and the timeline. I didn't see that, but those were out of his mouth in an interview about how to convince people to get the shot.
Okay. Can you, will you?
I'll get the audio for tomorrow.
Yeah. Will you get the audio?
Yeah. We'll bring the audio in tomorrow.
I want to play that if you can get it. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We just hope, folks, that we can get your blood pressure
right.
just as
Fauci
high.
Can do
just
that.
As high, just as high as we can get it today. And Fred's off to a good start for us here. So he's bringing in the all-stars of hypertension, Dr. Anthony Fauci being the first one. What do you got next, Fred?
Up next.
Up next.
The Attorney General of the United States.
Head explode.
Merrick Garland.
Okay, let our heads explode here.
Yes. He is before a hearing right now, Jim Jordan's committee, the House Judiciary Committee. All right, number one in this, in his opening statement, he repeated that he was refusing to release the audio of the transcript that the special counsel Hur did with President Biden, in which, remember Hur, at the end, he said, you know, he's a dawdling old man, wouldn't make any sense to charge him with his keeping of these classified documents. Remember all that. So Garland repeated this morning in his opening statement, I'm not going to give in to that because it might discourage people down the road from giving interviews to the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. But then there was this exchange, I'm going to play you a little bit of this, between Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz and the Attorney General. Gaetz basically said, now tell me, Attorney General, when you were a lawyer and you were a judge prior to becoming Attorney General, did you give it to any political parties? And he said, no, there's a federal rule. You can't do that. And then he said, would you recuse yourself from a case if you had given to a political party? And that's when Garland got his back up. He says, I know what you're trying to do. You're referring to the Trump case in New York, and I'm not going to answer your question. All right? Because remember, Marshawn, the judge in New York, made donations to Joe Biden and has a daughter that is a political activist and raises money against the Republican Party. All right, so I want you to hear the exchange between Congressman Matt Gaetz and Attorney General Merrick Garland. Cut 12.
Communicating with these state and local prosecutions against Trump, you can clear it all up for us right now. Will the Department of Justice provide to the committee all documents, all correspondence between the department and Alvin Bragg's office and Fannie Willis's office and Letitia James's office?
The offices you're referring to are independent offices of state.
I get that. State. The question is whether or not you will provide all of your documents and correspondence. That's the question. I don't need a history lesson.
Well, I'm going to say again, we do not control those offices. They make their own
decisions. The
question
is whether you communicate with them, not whether you control them. Do you communicate with them, and will you provide those communications?
You make a request. We'll refer it to our Office of Legislative Affairs.
But see, here's the thing. You come in here and you lodge this attack that it's a conspiracy theory that there is coordinated lawfare against Trump. And then when we say, fine, just give us the documents, give us the correspondence, and then if it's a conspiracy theory, that will be evident. But when you say, well, we'll take your request, and then we'll sort of work it through the DOJ's accommodation process, then you're actually advancing the very dangerous conspiracy theory that you're concerned about.
All right, so what Gaetz was referring to there is that a high-ranking official in the AG's office suddenly took a job in the New York prosecutor's office and helped prosecute former President Trump. And Garland just did not want to talk about that.
Mm. Wow, wonder why.
Yeah.
So that was Merrick Garland, the AG, and that's Matt Gaetz, the mm-hmm. congressman from Florida.
Yes. It was a very powerful exchange, and Garland's just...
You know what Garland should have said? He should have said, our office did not collude or meet with the people you've mentioned, the offices you mentioned, about anything, period.
Yeah.
That's all you got to say.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right. And why not answer the question about, do you think a judge should recuse himself when he's been giving money to the political opponent of the defendant?
Right.
And he wouldn't answer that.
Yeah. Well, because there is no good answer right there for that one. But that was Merrick Garland. So he's on Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Today. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. By the way, Jay Warner Wallace will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Many of you have read his books, Cold Case being the a big one. Mm-hmm. He's going to be on with us about his new book called The Truth in True Crime. What investigation death teaches us about the meaning of life. So Jay Warner Wallace will be with us later on in the program. All right, next story, Fred.
Well, we kind of mentioned this yesterday, but today apparently President Joe Biden is going to make his official announcement on his executive action he's going to take. He says to try to bring some control. And this is amazing. He created the crisis at the border.
I know.
And now he's saying, look at me. I'm going to, because the Republicans will not agree to legislation, I'm going to come to the rescue. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm only going to allow 2,500 illegal immigrants into the country every day. All right? So I'm going to put
And then what happens? What kicks in then?
What? Well, he says he's going to stop it, but okay.
So we get, like, take a number?
Yeah.
At the border?
Everybody knows.
Like a lottery?
Yes.
Or something? You got to be 2,500 a day, so you stand in line. Mm-hmm. Like for a Taylor Swift concert, make sure you get in.
Yeah. But you know what? This is the thing. And also before another hearing today on Capitol Hill is FBI Director Christopher Wray in connection with this, because Christopher Wray has said publicly, and this is from a hearing in March, he is very concerned about the criminal element that is entering our country through the southern border. Cut number five.
From an FBI perspective, we are seeing a wide array of very dangerous threats that emanate from the border, and that includes everything from the drug trafficking. An awful lot of the violent crime in the United States is at the hands of gangs who are themselves involved in the distribution of that fentanyl.
So that's just fentanyl. Not to mention the most recent cases. You have the Venezuelan illegal immigrant charged in the murder of that nursing student in Georgia. And then just 48 hours ago, you had two New York police officers shot by a suspect now who also is in the country illegally from Venezuela. All of them have, those two guys have entered since Joe Biden basically did away with all the restrictions that Trump had put in place.
If we remember, though, just a couple of weeks back, Biden and his administration and those that are responsible for what's going on at the border said that everything was fine and nothing was wrong.
Oh, yeah, they did. So, they maintained that for the first now 3 years.
Right.
Yes.
So so what changed in the last couple of weeks?
The election.
Right.
Yes. Right.
That's what's changed is the election.
Yeah, this is Bush wind addressing. He's trying to make the best of the worst issue for him.
Right also, now. Too, backing up, remember also, day one of his presidency, he overturned, I saw the number a couple weeks back when I looked at it, but I know it was over 10, I think it was close to 15, but he overturned or did away with 10 executive orders that had to do with border safety.
That were in place under President Trump.
Right.
And also, Ray, you remember Mayorkas, we had that quote, the Secretary of Health, of Homeland Security. He was on television after the inauguration. He got into office. He was bragging about how they had gotten rid of all Trump's restrictions that were in place.
The whole thing is so phony, Tim. It's exactly what you said. Joe Biden's policies created this crisis.
Correct.
Created it, and now he wants to issue some.
Act like he's a savior.
That's right.
Yeah,
They are not going to buy it.
People aren't buying it.
He criticized the Republicans for not wanting to support the border bill about 2 months ago that had funding for all these other countries and hardly any money for the border. In addition to that, they were supposed to cut it off at 5,000. Well, he's cutting it off at 2,500 here. I mean, it's a mess.
All right, Fred. Thank you, Fred, for this half hour of just sunshine and hope for America. You've done your service.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm gonna have to have some popcorn and coffee. And calm down.
You're gonna take your break here.
I'm gonna take my break. Jay Warner Wallace, Maybe he'll soothe us. he'll be our guest in a few minutes.
This June marks 2 years since the overturn of Roe v. Wade. But did you know that the number of abortions actually increased the following year? In 2023, the amount of abortions reached its highest level since 2012. Preborn continues to stand strong for women in crisis. Preborn is a ministry of compassion that showers women and babies with God's love, providing free ultrasounds to mothers to introduce them to the precious life growing inside of them. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 helps to rescue five babies. Your generous tax-deductible donation will also help to provide women who choose life with assistance for up to 2 years. So please, give your best gift. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson, Wesley Wildman, and Ray Pritchard. And, well, many of you have read the cold case books by J. Warner Wallace. He is our guest now. He serves as senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. And he's also an adjunct professor of apologetics at Biola University. And he's got a new book out. J. Warner, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate being with all of you.
How long have you been adjunct professor?
Well, so when I first came out of my law enforcement career, which was probably 2013,
yeah,
I think that same year they wanted me to come over and start teaching courses at Biola, which I have. I just finished a course last Saturday and Friday and Saturday. So sometimes our apologetics program is kind of set up so you can take it in bursts. You know, you can take it, some of it's distance, some of it's in class, some of it is a kind of a two-day, all-day kind of a thing. So we've offered it in a number of different ways. So I'd say probably about over 10 years now. Crazy how fast that went.
All right. So your new book is titled what?
It's The Truth in True Crime, What Investigating Death Teaches You About the Meaning of Life. It's just a very different departure for me. Most of my books, as you know, are apologetics books that make the case for either the reliability of Scripture or for God's existence or for why we should have a more reasonable faith or the impact of Jesus on culture. This is a book that really is kind of 15 rules for life that you learn from 15 different true crime stories that I've experienced over my career, because it turns out those are the times, those kinds of cases you're working are really when you start to see what's in the heart of all of us, right? Not just the suspects and victims that you're dealing with. You see the same kind of cautionary tales again and again and again and again, and I've always wanted to write a book where I can just say, hey, you know what? It turns out that we are shaped a certain way that is revealed in these crimes that is actually been written about for thousands of years. It's the biblical description of our anthropology, biblical anthropology, basically. And so I wanted to write a book that kind of showed that.
Give us one of the examples from the book.
Well, one of these examples in the book, and it's probably the one that I talk about the most because I think it's the biggest key to human flourishing. So these are 15 rules for life that will help us flourish that are confirmed by true crime stories and confirmed by modern sociological studies, but they're also very ancient. And one story we're talking about here is a local legend in our gang community years ago who was a bit of a celebrity based on his exploits. And the story in this chapter tells about what actually happened to this guy. But here's what's interesting about it. It reveals an aspect of human flourishing that I bet if we asked most non-believers, we said, you know what? What's the one thing you could embrace that would change your life most significantly for the better. Every dimension of flourishing would improve: your longevity, your physical health, your mental health, the depth of your relationships, your marriage, your school, how well you do at school, the grades you get, the amount of income you're going to earn, whether you'll be a good employee, a bad employee. All of these things are determined really most dramatically by one thing you could embrace. And it's called, and the studies have been going on for about 35 years on this, so I've collected all of them. They're in the book. But it's this attribute we know as humility. And I think most of us who aren't Christians, if you said, so what is it? What's the one thing you could do? I've had people say things like, well, I don't know, exercise. I mean, they aren't quite sure what it is. But it turns out it's humility. And the studies demonstrate this. And this, of course, if this particular gangster I was working had had any humility, he'd be alive today. But that, he's not, because he didn't. Now, what's interesting about that is, think about it. Of all the worldviews that might develop humility, which one would do it best? Well, it turns out that any worldview in which you earn something you expect to receive, that doesn't develop humility. In fact, it develops just the opposite. I had a friend, Mike Adams, who years ago used to tease. He was writing a book, you know, How to Become Humble in 10 Easy Steps and How I Made It in 8. You know, the problem is, if you pursue humility, you become prideful about your pursuit of humility. So it turns out the one worldview that might, like, so if you're a secular atheist, you believe that you're going to do certain things and you're going to get a certain reward. You're going to go to school. You're going to get a diploma. You're going to do certain things at your job. You're going to get a promotion. It's all about a meritocracy. Can I earn what I get? But that always develops pride. And theistic worldviews, spiritual worldviews in which you think you can earn something before a holy God, will also develop pride. This is why Jesus says those two men in the synagogue, the one has, God, I'm not like that other guy, because we compare each other. You'd have to develop a worldview and present a worldview that says, you know what, there's nothing you can do to earn this. It's not about what you can earn. We're going to give it to you as a free gift. Salvation is going to be offered to you as a free gift, so Paul says, so that no one can boast. It's the antidote for celebrity. It's the antidote for pride, because it is so deeply grounded in the first act of humility. You have to embrace the idea that, hey, there's a God and you're not him, and you can do nothing to earn your way into that God's presence. It has to be given to you freely. Now, interestingly, that could be a coincidence that the one attribute that contributes most to our human flourishing happens to be personified in the humility that Jesus bore on the cross. Or it could be that this is the worldview that best gets you, because it's from your maker, it's from your creator, who knows how you were designed and what you were designed for and how you could best function as designed.
All right. And again, the title of the book is what? Is it available now?
Yes, The Truth in True Crime, and you can just find it at thetruthintruecrime.com. So we've got, a pretty decent offer to help people to see what it's about, and also to give you some free resources. Hopefully, it'll help you become a better defender of your beliefs.
How long were you a cold case investigator?
Well, we were assigning cold cases collaterally. So
where was this? Where was this?
This is in Los Angeles County, California,
and Dragnet.
Well, yeah. LA. My dad actually started in that job in 1962. But wow. I started working these. I was assigned to other details, and eventually we had such success that they formed a detail for cold cases. So all in all, I probably did them about 15 years.
Yeah. Now, so you weren't a private investigator. You were a part of the Los Angeles Police Department. But is that right?
Well, no. So I was in Los Angeles County. There's about 34 municipal agencies in California. So I was one of those. We were called Torrance, California. It's a suburb of Los Angeles.
I got you.
So
I get what I guess. What I'm asking is, with cold cases, those would be described as cases of crime, violent crime, I guess, murder, that were never solved, right?
Right. Right. So cold cases are only homicides. Every other kind of crime has a statute of limitations, and eventually it'll close, and you can't even work it anymore. But murders don't have any statute of limitations. So my dad's case, I did a case for my dad. He first investigated it in 1972. It didn't get solved till 2019. But you can go back and do a case that old, because there's no statute of limitations.
How did DNA change your profession there?
Well, it has changed the investigation of cold cases nationally, probably pretty dramatically. It wasn't as big an influence on me, only because, you know, not every case has DNA, especially if you're going back to the 70s, when no one even could predict that we should collect this over here because there might be a DNA possibility in the future. So they just didn't know what to collect and not collect. So most of my cases, all but one, that one I told you about that we solved in 2019, all but that one were solved without DNA. But I think that, so for those cases that were probably went cold in the 90s and beyond, DNA has been a significant help, I would say.
I'll just say this. Columbo was my favorite show. In the 70s.
Well, it still is, believe it or not. It still is one of the... That and Monk, believe it or not. If you were to ask people, what's your favorite detective show?
Yeah.
It turns out it's a comedy.
The guy... You're talking about the guy who washes his hands all the time. He's a...
Yes.
He's a... What is he? Some kind of a...
Obsessive-compulsive.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we're talking to Jay Warner Wallace. Brand new book out. Tell folks how they can go to your website and get the book.
Yep, just visit thetruthintruecrime.com, and you'll see that we actually have also a casemakers course that we're offering for anyone who buys the book. Because we want people to actually learn how to defend what they believe, especially in a culture right now that is definitely challenging us. So it's time for us to be able to meet that challenge.
Yeah. Ray, did you have a question for Jay Warner?
Mr. Wallace, thank you so much for writing this. I'm sort of just thumbing through. And I got to say, I've never seen a book exactly like this. And I want to say to our listeners, this is the truth in true crime. Mr. Wallace, you've written a book I don't think anybody else has written. And that's an unusual thing to say today. Just to give a little, I guess I do have a question here, but just to give our listeners a little idea of these 15, you call them leads. Lead number one, a pool of blood under my feet. Lead number two, fake IDs and a stolen identity. Lead number three, a target, a bullseye, and a circle of concern. What I'm saying, folks, is this is a very readable book, and you've taken principles and stories from true crime and applied it to the Christian life in a way I've never seen done before. Can I just ask you about one of these? I have to pick up. I don't know which one to pick, but I'm going to pick number 11 because of the title, "The Killer Inside." The Killer Inside. Tell our listeners, I just want them to get a little flavor of your book. So what is The Killer Inside?
Well, this is a story about a case, and I've had a lot of these, where the people who eventually get arrested, you just can't believe that they were capable of doing the murder. I mean, when you're working cold case murders, you're working a guy who did one murder 30 years ago. And he's not a serial killer. He just did one. And then for the next 30 years, he lives among us, and you wouldn't even know that he was even capable of such a thing. They become leaders in your community. They become your elders on your deacon board, your elder board. They become doctors, and I've arrested fire captains. And they end up in all their other aspects of life because we have to ask a fundamental question. Why are we surprised that these kinds of folks might have done something terrible in the past? Do we believe, and this is what the culture is kind of telling us, that people are innately good and pure and innocent? And then they're just corrupted by their families, their environments, their circumstances, the governmental systems even. Or do we believe that humans are innately fallen and broken, and we are the corruptors of families and systems and organizations, even church organizations? Which of these two things is it? In other words, are we good or are we bad? Are we some combination of both? Well, it turns out the data that you see I've written about it in the book, even from a secular perspective, would tell you that, we're not innately innocent, because although we can do altruistic things, we'll do them only so long as they benefit us. So, for example, if resources get tight, even the most altruistic amongst us now is hoarding toilet paper like we all did during the pandemic. Why are we doing that? Because our innate desire is self-preservation at the cost of anyone else. And so that's the question. Mm-hmm. Does our basic nature, does it match what the secular humanists want us to believe? Or does it match what biblical descriptions of our fallen nature would tell us and have us believe? Which is it? And it makes a difference which one you believe. So, for example, when I'm sitting across a table from somebody who's accused of a murder, if I don't know the real true nature of who I am, I might be fooled into thinking that the entire world is divided between good people and bad people. And this table is dividing this room between a good person and a bad person, when in fact, the Scripture tells me that no, that's not the case. For example, if you don't know who you are, you're much less likely to be forgiving or even accepting or even reach out to others that you think are just so far below you that there's no point in it. It turns out a proper view of who we are will actually influence the way we treat others. And you see this in the story of Simon, right, where Jesus comes to Simon's dinner, and there's a woman from the city there, and she's lavishing Jesus with everything, and Simon hasn't done anything for Jesus, and he's kind of thinking that this woman shouldn't even be touching Jesus, and Jesus offers that parable about who two people who owe a lot of money, and one owes more than the other, and they're both forgiven the debt, and he asks Simon, who do you think is more happy about having their debt forgiven? And Simon says, well, of course, the person who owes the most. The whole point of the story is that she understood her sin. She understood her true nature and knew her need for forgiveness. Simon didn't. And the least forgiving people you know and that I know are people for whom they think they have no need for forgiveness. If you don't think you need forgiveness, you're very unforgiving of others because you think that you're actually above them. And the reality of it is, once I realized who I really was, it changed the way I interacted with people who were on the other side of the table. And I think that's good. That's probably a piece of advice that I'd like for all of us to think about seriously. And it all comes down to, is there a killer inside?
I want to ask you one final question, and then we'll let you go here. But this isn't really a cold case question, just a police question, I guess, or a question in your profession. What is the number one reason why people commit homicide?
Well, there's only three reasons why anyone has ever committed a homicide.
Okay, I'm going to write these down. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
It's also the same three reasons why any of us does anything stupid, why any pastor falls from his position. And it's the same thing over and over and over again. I learned this before I was ever a Christian. It's just not 1,000 reasons why this woman might be dead. There's only three. Find me somebody who fits one of those three, and we're probably on our way. And it comes down to financial greed.
What did you say? Financial greed?
Financial greed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Money. Sexual lust, relationships, sex, and the pursuit of power. And that pursuit of power section is probably the biggest one. So if I feel disrespected, if one gangster disrespects another and ends up killing over it, why? What is that about? It's pursuit of power. If someone walks into a room and kills 30 people of a different color, what is that about? I think my color is more important than your color. That's a power issue.
Okay.
So even celebrity can be the pursuit of power. So it turns out sex, money, and power, it's a 1 John 2 principle. It's in Scripture, but it's also true for every crime we work. And so I would say that third category, the pursuit of power, is often, because sometimes it's just that I want to live my life the way that I want to live it, and I can't live it that way as long as my wife is alive. What is that? That's the pursuit of power, the freedom, the autonomy to do whatever you want to do. So a lot of the stuff that I'm working is in that third category, the power category.
Financial greed,
sexual lust.
Sexual lust, like in jealousy?
So if it's jealousy, like what are you jealous about? It's going to be one of those three things. It's going to be a money, sex, or power thing that you're jealous of. So jealousy is not its own category. It's just the effect of those three. If you're feeling vengeful, what are you feeling vengeful about? It's going to be one of those three. There is no fourth category. It's just those three. So it's why I say that, all the
money, sex, or power.
Money, sex, or power. It's okay. Pretty simple. And if you're a pastor, it's pretty simple to protect yourself, right? You know now where to protect yourself. But here's the problem for pastors is that we typically think that, hey, we want you to be famous because then you have a bigger church. So as a group, we're like, hey, yeah, we're okay with your efforts to be known, but those are just as dangerous as the money and the sex issues. Power is dangerous, and it often leads to the other two because I've never known anyone who didn't scratch one of those three itches that didn't eventually scratch the other two.
That's a good country song right there. What you had there at the end there.
I'll let you go ahead and write it.
I'll write it.
I won't even take any credit.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jay. Jay Warner
Thanks
Wallace joining
appreciate
us. Appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
All right.
He joins us. I'm not sure what town, where you live. Maybe California? I don't know exactly. But you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Yes, sir.
Obviously, great interview. Great. Really
you're
good thing. Yeah, you're welcome. A really good interview. Great thinker. Bible verse that came to mind.
What about him, though?
Him? Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take a couple people to get that.
You're embarrassing these flattering comments.
Well, now do I have to tell you that I'm not talking about you?
Oh, well, that may lead to a pursuit of power on my part. But you better watch your back, is what I got to say, because you talk bad about me. Here, go ahead.
On the record, too.
Yes.
Philippians 2:3 says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others more important than yourself." One of the first Bible verses I chose to memorize, and as he pointed out at the beginning when we were interviewing about his book, the importance of humility is a one major principle in the success in all areas of your life, whether that's in your occupation, whether that's in education, whether that's in marriage, in your family, in your parenting. Humility is a huge component, and obviously that's a biblical. Yeah.
He's a good friend of Frank Turek's. I know that.
Frank Turek's endorsed the book.
Yeah, anyway, very popular speaker around the country as well. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What's your next story, Fred?
When you think of the country's most liberal newspapers, mm-hmm. you probably think of what? New York Times?
Mm-hmm.
I would think competing against the New York Times, Washington Post.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
What if I told you that the Jeff Bezos-owned Washington Post lost more than $70 million last year and lost 50% of its audience in the same period?
Well, if I were the owner, that would lead me to a crime of passion, which is financial greed.
Exactly.
That's the number one thing. In all seriousness, when I was in journalism school a long time ago, at least back in that era, up until the last maybe 10 years or so, since the advent, at least the rise, the surge in website news, okay, that is that – the news that emanated from the New York Times and from the Washington Post, for example, that whatever they cared about, whatever was important with that, and the three networks, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC at the time, those were big news agencies. And whatever they thought was important was spread all over the country. Mm-hmm. You know this, Fred, having mm-hmm. studied your profession, the journalism profession. So, the Washington Post has been around a long time. They're the ones who were famous for breaking the story about Richard Nixon and Watergate and so forth. Mm-hmm. Very influential paper, especially among our nation's leaders in Washington, D.C. They care a lot about what the Washington Post says. And they were very profitable. But now, because they've gone, I'm guessing, because they've a combination of people aren't buying newspapers anymore like they used to, right?
Yeah, but they have a subscription based on online.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They have ways to make money.
Yes, but primarily it's because of their left-wing ideology.
Exactly.
That they're losing business.
Well, yesterday, the Washington Post publisher and CEO, William Lewis, called a staff meeting. And here's the verdict on why they're losing readers and why they're losing so much money. This is a direct quote of Mr. Lewis to the staff who gathered there. Quote, "People are not reading your stuff," end quote. That's pretty blunt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, he's right about that.
Well, yeah. And that came just a few hours after the executive editor there, Sally Busby, who's only been there 3 years, was let go. Now, yesterday there was an AP story saying she left the paper, but she was let go after she refused to accept a plan to try to get that faltering newspaper back on track, because what Mr. Lewis wants to do, the CEO there, is break it into three different kind of news divisions. I'm sure it has to do with digital and products and that sort of thing. Now, what the story from Fox this morning does not mention, I do believe, and this is interesting, one of the guys that Mr. Lewis is bringing in to try to help things out is a former Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief, Matt Murray. Now, you've got this is almost like somebody from Fox News being hired by CNN to try yeah. To try.
The Wall Street Journal is generally conservative.
Generally conservative.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a result. I think it has to do a whole lot with their editorial stance.
Yeah.
And the American people certainly don't want to pay money for left-wing ideology. You know, it's the opposite of that is why Fox is so successful financially.
Right.
You know, this is good news.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to cover some difficult news, obviously, or some bad news at times. But this is good news because this is just one more example of many examples over the last 5 years or so where the phrase, if you go woke, you go broke.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it catches up with you because your bank account runs out because people don't donate to this, which is why I'll just give you two quick ones. So CNN's numbers over the last 4 or 5 years, they've tanked. They're having to figure out how that's going to their viewership.
Way down.
Another one just along the ideology, leaving the media outlet, but BLM. Okay, so they raised their money,
mm-hmm.
And then they realized that a lot of their money was not going toward the cause. Then they start going, then they start losing their money. They start losing their influence, their platform. The bottom line is if you get down to the heart of the woke movement, it is division, is hatred, it's unforgiving, it's not uniting
mm-hmm.
people, it's doing the opposite of what it claims to do. And so once it surfaces, then you get this. And so with WAPO, they're obviously having to figure out that they're target audience is not paying for what they want, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a large enough audience.
The Washington Post
yep.
newspaper has, I think they, you know, they used to be more or less news, hard news, but now they've become so far left in their content that people are not subscribing.
Yeah.
Or they're losing a lot of subscribers. People, as you say, Wesley, don't want to pay for that. All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.